Roundtable Podcasts, underwritten by Proctors, the Capital Region's premier performing arts center featuring the best in entertainment from Broadway and around the globe. Proctors.org.
Richie Neal, one of my favorite people in the whole world. Let's start by talking about the tax reform work that you've been doing on the Ways and Means Committee. Now, tell everybody what your position on that committee is and what it does.
Well, I've been a member of what is known as the Select Revenue Subcommittee, and that's actually a term that suggests nothing more than taxes. And we've been in the midst now for the last few months of going through these very informal sessions that have been set up by the chairman of the committee, Dave Camp of Michigan, for the purpose of securing information and trying to figure out why certain items are in the code and to understand that the code has really not been touched for 25 years in terms of fundamental tax reform. The last time it happened, I'll just throw out some names: O'Neill, Reagan, Gephardt, Packwood, and Bradley. And those are names that come to a mind.
Indeed.
And Rostenkowski, of course. So those are the names that participated the last time around, and many of them are either deceased or have long ago left the Congress. There is this issue that I think is well noted by the term tax expenditure, and all that implies is that but for the exclusion or preference in the code, that would be revenue that would be coming to the federal government. And the three major expenditures, as I've just described, are really pretty popular with the American people.
Mm-hmm.
One, of course, is the homeowner deduction.
Indeed.
Two is employer-based health insurance. And three, charitable giving. And after that, there really is not a lot of revenue.
So those are the deductions that most people take.
Those are the big deductions that most people take. There are small deductions in the code, but they really don't add up to a lot of money after that. And the homeowner deduction in many places is certainly noted for being almost sacrosanct. And I think in a state like Massachusetts, where we have many arts undertakings and we have superb libraries, colleges, and hospitals, charitable giving is a very important consideration. And many of our best institutions depend heavily upon that charitable deduction for revenue.
Just an aside here, have you and your studies, the staff studies, shown that people like me, who may give a couple of $100 to my local hospital during a year, would not give it if there wasn't a deduction?
Well, I think that there's certainly an argument there that some would entertain on a flat or round basis, but my sense is that it induces people to give a lot of money at prescribed periods of time. For example, last year, when this whole question of tax reform began to percolate, there were many charitable institutions that believed that the deduction was going to be pared back.
Mm-hmm.
The result was that last year there was a pretty healthy infusion of money into charitable giving.
Because they thought we got to beat
them. They thought they might lose the deduction. So I think the evidence is pretty clear.
Yeah.
That it is an item that incents people to give.
Okay. And then, so we have the homeowners, we have the charitable tax deduction, and the third?
Is employer-based health insurance. Employers set up health insurance plans for employees, and they can use perhaps tax credits, or they have a variety of opportunities to take advantage of the contribution that they make to the employee or the employer side of the health care prescription. And I certainly don't think that's going away, to be very frank, given the fact that we're about to enter a critical period for the Affordable Care Act, about 75 days out, we will begin implementation of the exchanges. And that means that I can't imagine that the Obama administration is going to discourage employers from offering health insurance. And again, I think one of the reasons that employers offer health insurance, it's because they take advantage of items in the code, again, back to the notion of the tax credit or the exclusion that encourages them to set up the apparatus that helps provide their contribution to the employee's health insurance plan.
Got it. So now, Richie Neal, we are faced with those three, which take up a lot. I mean, that costs the country. But on the other hand, we read in the paper that major corporations don't pay a single dime.
Well, I think that's a very reasonable criticism. In fact, one of the things that's happening is across the world, I use a term that we frequently apply here, and it's called base erosion. And what base erosion implies is that there is an effort made in some very sophisticated accounting practices to not report actually where the money is being made, but to ship the profit to a low-tax jurisdiction.
Interesting.
And I think that that's where fundamental tax reform ought to be centered. You would note that there is a difference between legitimate tax avoidance, which is taking advantage of items that are in the code that protect one, but there's also very sophisticated tax evasion, and that is a very different topic.
It's evasive, but it's not illegal necessarily, right?
Well, I think evasion, my own sense is that in the Cayman Islands or in Bermuda or Liechtenstein or some of those tax havens, that really is illegal.
Okay.
But they take advantage of what is known as this reincorporation process, where they set up a post office box on some obscure island that is tax-favored. And that's very different than the case that just arose, as you would recall, with Apple.
Sure.
And with Apple, the argument really was different to the extent that the head of the company said, look, this is the tax system, and we'd be foolhardy not to do the things that we do to help keep prices low, to understand that one of the ongoing arguments here that is really an interesting one, it's where profits are made than where profits are reported. And we have, there is an exclusion in the tax code right now known as subpart F. And with subpart F, you would say perhaps that there's a major American company. I would say, let's use the example of Procter & Gamble, for example.
Hmm.
Now, Procter & Gamble, they sell diapers, and they sell them by the millions. But their argument is that we have to have an outpost in Beijing, for example, because shipping the cost of those diapers otherwise would be so prescriptive as to put us at a competitive disadvantage. So they build a plant in China to sell those diapers to Chinese consumers. The argument that they have is that they pay a tax in China, and then they get a tax credit here in America for that plant that they operate. But what's complicated about this is that that money sits offshore, because if it were to be brought back to America, it would be taxed at a 35% rate.
Mm-hmm.
So here's the interesting part about it. They're saying that the money is held offshore only because it is money that is already taxed in a foreign jurisdiction. And at Apple, if you recall, in the testimony that was offered by the head of the company, he simply said, well, look, if we had a more predictable system with a lower corporate tax rate, then we think that it would mean more money for the federal treasury. That's an item that's being discussed and debated right now, and as part of this corporate tax discussion.
We've got 2 minutes here. I want to carry this on to the next time we talk, too. But I did want to ask you this. What's the difference between the Republican way of looking at tax, quote, reform, and the Democratic way?
Well, on the House side, I think the fundamental difference right now is that their adherence to this argument that if you cut taxes, there'll be more revenue, I think has really ill-served America for the past 25 years.
Mm-hmm. That's how we got into all the trouble.
I think that's how we got into all the trouble. It's a theology. It is really not based upon fact. And I think that this argument that if you simply cut corporate taxes to be competitive, then in fact there's going to be more revenue, or that the tax system will...
Yeah, but if it's a theology, Richie, do they believe in it?
Oh, they do. They subscribe to it. And
well, they subscribe to it because these are people who give them the money and all the rest of it.
But I've challenged this time and again, arguing that the president has opened the door here to the extent that he has said that we are one of the last countries on earth that we tax foreign-sourced income at two different places, where it's earned, and then if it's brought back, we tax it again. So I think that the president's correct when he says, look, we need to adjust the corporate tax rate. He's saying move it from 35 to 28. Republicans are saying move it from 35 to 25. But the real issue here is what is known as the effective tax rate, the ETR. And the effective tax rate essentially, on average in America, is about 16%.
Mm-hmm.
The difficulty is that you will have those who are very good in their tax accounting departments of taking advantage of every exclusion in the code, and then you will have others where it's harder to have an address. For example, Oracle comes to mind, and because they do a lot of software development, it's harder for them to have an offshore presence, so they pay closer to that 35%.
Now, Richie Neal, I want to stop you right there. We're out of time for today. But when we come back, I wanted to continue this conversation. The reason I love talking to you is because you're such a good teacher. You always lay it out for us, and then we begin to understand some of the complications. So thank you for doing it, and we'll be back soon.
Thank you, Alan.